This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome former congressman for California's 50th and 51st congressional districts, former chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, former mayor of San Diego, and author of the new book, Trumping Trump, Making Democrats Progressive Again, and that is Bob Filner. Bob, welcome. How are you?
Good, Jason. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. I listen to you, and I'm glad to be with you.
Well, it's good to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. And I want to start off, Bob. I mean, I want to hear a little bit about your adventures in San Diego as mayor. Those are pretty interesting and unfortunate, and you've been very open about that. But you've got an interesting idea on financial transactions. And since, you know, our listeners are very interested in finance and economics and taxation and investing, tell us about, you know, kind of the thought process here and then what your idea is. It's a very original idea, isn't it?
Well, there actually is an academic background to it, but let me just say the purpose of my book, Trumping Trump, is to tell the Democratic Party that they must be bolder, more innovative, more activist in their approach to what's going on in the world today to get back into power. And one of the ideas I suggest is based on something called the Tobin tax. Tobin is T-O-B-I-N. He was a professor of economics at Yale University, recently passed away. But his idea was to take the trillions of dollars per day of what we'll call what are called financial transactions, but are really part of a big casino worldwide. That is, people are betting on currency trades, the value of the currencies. They're betting on commodities increases or decreases in price. We're not talking about transactions that are based on real assets, like a mortgage. We're talking about more derivative kinds of betting that goes on every day. Trillions of dollars per day, Jason. Now, if you tax that at a very, very, very minute amount, less than 1%, so you're not stopping the trading that goes on, you can raise hundreds of billions of dollars. Now, if the Democratic Party took up that tax, they literally could be the party of no taxation, because it could replace an income tax. It could probably replace many sales taxes and even get into property taxes. But the point is, it's a very original kind of tax that could bring in, as I said, hundreds of billions of dollars and not involve the average person who is affected by taxes. This is the way the party ought to be thinking about it.
Okay, so few questions here. So there are these derivatives and financial instruments and currencies, and this is all traded all around the world every day. And, you know, there's trillions of dollars in transactions, according to you. And so the Tobin tax would tax these transactions. So every time a transaction occurs, they'd pay a fee on that. Now, if you do that, though, I mean, everything you tax, you discourage. When you tax something, it generally becomes smaller, right? And so do we want less of this? Is that good for the economy? If it's taxed, I assume there's going to be less of it, right?
Well, I don't, you know, the whole betting market, I don't think is economically productive in any case. But what Tobin suggested is such a small tax, 1% or less, that the trading community is not going to be bothered by that. But it's such a large amount that a small tax can bring in incredible money to the currency. The biggest problem, Jason, is just
the only thing is, though, that has a creep issue, right? Because the IRS tax started very, very low many years ago.
But you know, the idea is to keep it low, to keep the volume steady. But the real problem is that these are done, you know, on such an international scale and through, you know, really incredible computer programs and stuff that can avoid accountability. But you have to have various countries doing this at the same time, so nobody can escape, as it were, into a non-taxable
But there's always going to be a haven, right? There's always going to be some jurisdiction that won't play ball and tax with the rest, right?
There'll always be that, just as we have in the taxation system today. But I think you can capture enough of it that, again, you're dealing with such a high volume that it could have incredible income as a result.
Okay, so listen, I agree with you. I agree with you that Wall Street generally doesn't produce a lot of value in a lot of the things they do. There's no actual like economic value. You said that, and I'll give you that. I agree with you that anytime Wall Street talks about financial innovation, I tell my listeners run for the hills. You always know something's about to go bad, except for them. They always seem to make out just fine. But another tax, God, do we really need another tax? If we had that, you know, there's a huge industry built around the current tax system. You know, all these CPAs, I mean, what are they going to do? They're not just going to say give up. I mean, they all have lobbyists. They're not going to go away. You know, none of this is going to go away. There's still going to be income tax, and then there will be this tax too, right?
Well, I think you can get rid of the income tax. That's the point. That if,
yeah, but nobody's going to let you get rid of the income tax because there's too many vested interests in there.
Well, but we're talking about a political, you know, situation where if you market it good enough, you talk about getting rid of a middle class tax and adding on the 1% or even 1/10 of the 1%. I think you can create a political environment in which such a thing is possible. Of course, it's going to be tough. Anything that touches the those who control our economy and our political system is going to be tough. I'm just trying to say what we should be proposing and what could be part of our program at a time when the Democrats don't have a program, basically. I mean, who in elective office is seen as, you know, the generator of a Democratic program? What does the Democrats stand for? It's very unclear to me. And if you can take a limited number.
Well, I think maybe in the specifics you're right, but philosophically, Democrats stand for more government. They stand for, you know, redistribution of wealth, right? Good or bad, you know, I mean, don't they stand for those things?
I don't think so. I don't think you have to be. I'm trying to market the Democratic Party as the party of the middle class, the working people who voted for Trump and feel like they're getting screwed every day, and begin to look at things that are not necessarily viewed in the way you just described. That is, they have to be viewed in a way that protects working and middle class people, and is a fair thing that can deliver the kinds of services that people want from their government.
Mm-hmm. Well, since we're talking about the financial system, you know, Wall Street, the modern version of organized crime, let's talk for a moment about Jamie Dimon. I mean, this is a very prominent figure. I've been very critical of Jamie Dimon a couple times on prior shows. This is CEO of JP Morgan. You almost got him arrested during the financial crisis. Tell us about that.
Well, it was a way that I've just been talking about to dramatize what was going on in a way that could attract attention. Let me just back up. I was chairman of the Veterans Committee in the House of Representatives. We got, during the financial crisis and the foreclosures that were going on, we learned that banks, including the Diamond's Bank, J.P. Morgan, were in fact foreclosing on both active duty troops, that is, they're in Iraq or Afghanistan, or recent veterans. And the law protects those people from such things as foreclosures. You cannot foreclose on an active duty soldier. And yet, that's what J.P. Morgan and all the other banks had been doing. Now, so we called for, we asked Diamond to come in and to a hearing. He sent one of his 28 vice presidents. And she claimed that, you know, it was just a mistake in the coding of the their records. I mean, this was ridiculous. This was a, you know, a deliberate policy to squeeze as many people as they could.
Just like the robo-signing scandal, you know, that exactly. I love the way they did the math on that. There would be no possible way, unless you can bend time with a time machine, that they could have possibly reviewed all the files that Chase foreclosed on. It's literally impossible. Those frickin' criminals. I mean, they're just criminals.
And they caught up, you know, these soldiers in that scheme, which, you know, is specifically against the law. So I told the executives there, I said, look, we have cases of suicide every single day. I mean, dozens of suicides of recent veterans or even active duty. It was an epidemic. In fact, it still is. And if these suicides came about because of financial distress caused by foreclosure, your CEO Jamie Dimon is guilty of murder.
Yeah, but he doesn't care. Why is he going to care?
Yeah, I mean, but I wanted to call it what it is, Jason. That is, these people who were foreclosed on, some of them committed suicide. Now, tell me that's not murder. That is, you did something illegal, and you caused such distress that people couldn't face it. And I was trying to dramatize the fact of what these disclosures were and what these, you know, robocalls were and what all this stuff that they were claiming was, you know, not personally involved any of the executives. And by using that word murder, I mean, it got headlines all over the country. What happened is...
Well, you know, Charles Keating, I mean, people committed suicide over Charles Keating, sure. And Bernie Madoff, I believe.
Well, those people, in my view, Jason, I mean, we're too nice.
And Enron. Enron also. I think there were suicides out of the Enron scandal.
Yeah. Our legal system makes it unaccountable for these people for any of their personal actions. That is, they claim, oh, it's the process. Oh, you know, it didn't have anything to do with me. But it does. It's their policies that are causing these tremendous problems in society, including suicide. And what I did, in fact, it had such an effect on J.P. Morgan within a week, fastest response I've ever had. They came back with a program to help veterans in a way that we had never seen before, because I could see Mr. Dimon in his conference with all his vice presidents say, hey, we have this crazy congressman who's threatening to put me in jail. What should we do about it? And he had all these ideas about lowering the interest rates and giving veterans jobs and giving veterans the homes that they had already without any further payment. And they took them all. And they put out a program that said, we're going to hire vets, we're going to give them a decrease in their interest rates, we're going to give them some of them their houses at right now. And it had an incredible response. And what I was advocating, as I do in my book, the Democrats have to do this stuff to make sure that the attention is accurately focused and the response that is given is appropriate. And the Congress people and the senators and all the politicians, they're too soft on these guys, Jason. Look, they murder people. Let's call it what it is.
Yeah, I know. The problem is you got to for the legal standard, you'd have to show a causal connection, and you have no idea what else is going on in the person's life. And, you know, that's just too much of a stretch. It's never going to happen.
But, Jason, you're arguing on on the process and details. The idea is to make it so clear to people and, you know, beyond all this bureaucratic stuff, that people see what is happening, and therefore the political situation changes. You know, Jamie won't go to jail probably, but the whole notion of what they were doing might change.
You're right. Maybe it will. I mean, is it just as shocking and upsetting to you as it is to me that here, you know, just 10 years-ish ago, we had these criminals and banksters on Wall Street, right, that plunged the entire planet into a recession, and nobody went to jail. I mean, that's just shocking. Like Anthony Mozzillo with Countrywide, right? I mean, that guy got a slap on the wrist. It is pathetic that these people, you say you can't buy justice. That's not true at all. You certainly can buy justice. You can buy it with lobbyists, maybe not with lawyers directly, right? But with lobbyists to change the whole system in your favor. And if you ask me, and this is where the Democrats are totally wrong, the thing we need is less regulation of the financial system, not more. And I'll tell you why I say that. Maybe you think I'm nuts. Feel free to argue with me. But, you know, the more regulation we have, these bigwigs, secretly they love all this regulation because it keeps competitors out. There, you see this vibrant community in the world of technology where there's all these startups. Every day there's a whole bunch of new startups that are innovating like crazy, building all this great stuff, all this great technology. We get to take advantage of it. And you know why? Because there's almost no regulation in that. Yet on Wall Street and with banks, there's tons of regulation and there's no vibrancy. There's no startups. There's nobody coming up against Goldman Sachs. There's no competition. And that's why these criminals can just go roughshod over the entire planet.
The problem is with that analysis, Jason, is that when you have monopolies, whether it's utilities or whether it's banks, whether, you know, whatever it is, oil companies, there is no way for startups to occur. I mean, these guys control
and the regulation though gives them the monopoly, right?
But they have the monopoly. There's no way I could start a bank because I need $100 billion. There's no way I could start a new electrical utility because I have to lay, you know, utility lines of trillions of dollars. There's no way I can get into the... So there's no way for us in the modern world to deal with these monopolies except through regulation. But the regulation that you say is not working, it's because there's been no enforcement, there's no teeth. There's no the regulators come from the very businesses that they were supposed to regulate, and then they go back into those jobs after that. It's not the
The regulators at the SEC come in to audit the company, and then they're offered a job with that same company. That's just pathetic.
Right.
It's so unbelievable that can happen.
It's not the regulation.
And the same thing happens with the FDA, by the way. The FDA, same deal. Yeah.
With everything. Yeah. But that's not an argument against regulation. It's an argument against the way we do it.
Yeah, but the regulation creates the monopoly. Let me give you an example. This is a thought experiment we're having for a moment. And, you know, listen, in full disclosure, I'm definitely not a Democrat, okay? But I'm not a Republican either. I'm just a libertarian. I've given up on both sides, okay? But just so you know where I'm coming from. But, you know, look it. We have this thing with the war on drugs, right? And we've had this, you know, since Reagan, right? And
with what? I'm sorry?
Since Reagan, the war on drugs, right? Or at least he popularized it. And so we have all of this. And then we have a few states that have legalized marijuana. And now the price of marijuana has dropped and there's no business for the criminals anymore. That business has just completely dried up. We have this. I did a show on the absolutely horrific, disgusting subject of human trafficking. And why do we have human trafficking? Because prostitution's illegal, right? And that gives those traffickers a business, right? There's no human trafficking in Amsterdam, I'm sure, where prostitution's legal. And there's no drug trade in Portugal, or criminal drug trade, where drugs are legal, right? And there's no, in the states where marijuana is legal, there's no marijuana business, no illegal marijuana business, because the prices have plummeted and there's no business. On Wall Street, the reason these crooks have a monopoly is because of the regulation. If the regulation were to evaporate and there could be a vibrant startup community competing with these businesses. I admit that Goldman Sachs is still going to be huge forever because they've got such a head start. But we got to start somewhere, don't we?
I agree. I mean, look, I agree with you on drugs. I agree with you on prostitution. But you cannot take that into – those are decentralized economic things, right? I could grow my own marijuana. I can, you know, I could be a prostitute on my own. But I can't have $1 trillion worth of assets as a banker. That is – there's a difference in kind between oil, banking, insurance, utilities, from these other things where you can be a libertarian, and I'm with you. But you cannot leave the so-called market when you have these, when only four banks control the whole system, when only, you know, five oil companies control the whole world. There's no way that you can start up against these guys. You have got to bring them as a, you know, to make them too small to, you know, where they can fail.
You know, listen,
you have to break them up.
I agree with maybe breaking them up. So, you know, and the company that's got to be broken up is Google. Google needs to be broken up for sure, and probably Facebook, because the fact that they can control so much of our information, where one company controls like 70% of the internet traffic for the entire human race. But of course, Google is totally in with the government because they're cooperating. They're giving the NSA all our private information.
Yeah, but
information,
they are not, But they are not regulated.
I know.
Remember, when we broke up AT&T and the Bell system.
Yeah, I remember.
You made room for all the innovators that you want.
Right.
It's the breaking that up, and that was key. Not just allowing people to start up. You couldn't start up against AT&T. They controlled all of the wires and all of the
and they still control the last mile. I get it. But I mean, it's all different, but there will be innovators. There will be people that come in. I mean, look at, you know, you can't really say that because there are ideas that we can't even perceive today. Who would have imagined? Just let me make a comment on it and then you can respond. Who would have imagined several years ago that the largest hotel company in the world wouldn't own any real estate? It's called Airbnb. Who would have imagined that the largest transportation company in the world wouldn't own any cars? Uber, right? I mean, these are innovative ideas, and there will be innovative ideas in the world of banking and finance and all the Wall Street stuff too, you know? I mean, we just don't know what they are yet.
Of course. I mean, and you've seen the e-banking and the, you know, the e-insurance and the, you know, it's just
fintech.
And we'll have that. It's just that politically and economically, the monopolies are so powerful. You saw what happened when there was a wave, so-called, of deregulation of electricity. What the big utilities did is buy up all of the independent generators and everybody that was doing stuff to feed into the grid. They just bought them up and destroyed them. So it's a little bit more complicated than just allowing innovation, Jason.
It's always more complicated.
The free economy and the real competition and, you know, market-based stuff and, you know, where Ubers and everybody could flourish. But we're not there. In the basic things of our society are all monopolized. And unless we break those up, you're not going to get to the area where you want the innovation that is so important.
Okay, so antitrust laws. Use the antitrust laws to split these companies up and, you know, tell Google to split in two and Facebook to split in two. And I don't even know how that works. Like, I don't know how it worked under when AT&T happened because, you know, what do you do? Tell Sergey Brin he doesn't own half of his stock anymore? I mean, I don't even understand how you do that.
No, you have to. They had to provide, for example, their infrastructure to anybody who wanted it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Somebody didn't have to build a whole new system, you know, nationwide. They could build. They can use the grid that was already there. So, you know, you use the technology that exists and break it up, not just economically, but technologically. And There are ways to do it if the will was there.
Right. Interesting. I know people will say, don't sound very much like a capitalist when I say that, but I don't know. It's, you know, these things are complicated. Of course they are.
But I always ask, Jason, I always ask a libertarian, what do you do about red lights?
Well, you need traffic lights. They're good.
Why? You're interfering with my right to drive wherever I want to go.
Hey, listen. I may be a libertarian, but I think smoking should be illegal because it's disgust me. So we always have our own things that we want to keep, right? And I think that leaf blowers should be illegal because they're a total pestilence on society. Leaf blowers are just a pathetic, terrible invention that shouldn't even
exist.
You're
libertarian light.
And wait a sec. There's another one. Audio abuse, you know, where you go into these clubs and bars and the sound's too loud. I think that really needs to be illegal too. But because it's an assault on my ears.
Want regulation.
Now, what really should happen is it should all just be reviewed on sites like Yelp and the market should choose. But it's very hard to deliver the information, but it's getting easier, you know, to people. Before we wrap up, it would be remiss of me not to ask you what you think of the Trump administration. I'm sure it's not positive. What you think of the economy, where we're going. You know, me looking at the economy, it kind of feels like all systems are go, like we're really in for a couple of really bull years, unless there is some big secret being hidden from us again that Wall Street is up to its usual shenanigans. There's a lot we didn't know the last time around, and we learned a whole bunch of new acronyms as that crisis unfolded, just from the sort of general data that most of us can observe. It looks like, you know, boom times are here. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal that the average credit score in the United States is the highest it's ever been since they've been tracking it. It's 700 now. The average FICO score, 700.
Certainly mine is.
Yeah. So...
You know, but the problem, the problem with this administration, aside, you know, from substantially, Trump is so unpredictable, and as you know, all this stuff, people want to know what's going on, right? They want some certainty in the world, and you know, the stock market went up when everybody thought that Trump was going to cut taxes, and now, you know, it's starting to drop a little, but we don't know what he's going to do, nor do we know how it's going to play out. I'm afraid that he's going to take some drastic international action to basically what presidents have done all through our history, that is to unite people around a foreign adventure to distract them from the economic woes that we're experiencing, and in his case, the political woes. So I'm afraid there's going to be some international incident where we get involved in ways that we shouldn't have, and which we have unknown consequences. So I think this is going to become more and more unknown, and therefore, what always happens when you don't have any when you have instability is you have a drop in confidence and a drop in the market. So I'm really afraid of what's going to happen over the next 6 months in terms of, again, some sense of predictability in what our government does.
Yeah, you know, Trump is certainly unpredictable. I mean, on the regulatory side, I would say Obama was the same way. A lot of companies and executives just couldn't plan because they were so worried that Obama was going to, you know, attack them. But I don't know. Trump is the same. It's a different flavor, but
But things are, you know, there's really some changes, say, in terms of the climate change necessities, which, you know, Trump doesn't believe in. But businesses have decided that it's real, that we got to, you know, make changes. And in fact, we can make money off it. And they're the ones that are in the forefront of not having Trump withdraw from the Paris agreements, for example, on the climate. They understand that, again, my experience in politics, businesses always just want to know what the rules are, and they'll play by them, and they'll profit from them. Just give us the rules. Let us be predictable. And now if the rules are about reducing our carbon footprint, they'll be fine because they can do that. And in fact, in a way that will make them money. So I think that the businesses, the business environment has changed in terms of the climate stuff, for example. And I think they're going to want to keep us moving on that in that direction.
Well, you know, to be fair on that one, like the businesses have a self-serving interest. They want to look like do-gooders. And also, you know, they also save money with the whole climate change agenda in a lot of ways. You know, when you check in the hotel room, you know, we're not going to wash your sheets or your towels unless you ask us to, save energy, this, that. That really ultimately just saves them money. But, you know, yeah.
Yeah, but on a more basic sense, Jason, they're going to make money because, say, a decentralized energy situation, which, say, the solar businesses can thrive, the kind of innovative stuff that you were talking about earlier. They are going to do very well as we move to that kind of economy. And, you know, the fossil fuel economy is going to die. The question is, how do we move to a new one that is not economically disruptive? And we can do that. And businesses can take advantage of it, and they will.
Well, these are certainly complex things, and, you know, this is a whole nother rabbit hole we're going down. But, you know, I just wanted to ask you, though, I mean, you know, like, do you have an opinion on what's coming our way? Are we going to, you know, see inflation? Are we going to see, you know, with Trump and his protectionist ideas and the ideas of, you know, American jobs, it does seem like wages are going to go up under Trump. And it seems like we're going to have some inflation under Trump, too. Would you agree with those statements?
Well, I'm not an economist. I can't do that. But I think
the economist can't do it either, so don't worry.
His basic ideas, though, are so, I mean, he doesn't understand, for example, that if you put a tariff on imports and raise prices on the American citizen, you're gonna do harm to the economy. And you're going to make, and whoever is exporting may do well, but his stuff is so, he is so ununderstanding of the way the economy works that he could, you know, bring on more of a recession than a boom, because, you know, as far as trade goes, as far as energy goes, he's so uneducated on the impact that this can have on our economy that, just as I said about a unplanned international incident that he could get us into, this is scary stuff. And, you know, people are trying to restrain him, but who knows? He can't be restrained. And I think he can have a devastating impact on the economy, even though he wants to deregulate, and even though he wants to lower taxes, and even though, you know, corporate taxation will go down. There is so much instability that he can bring that will destroy us more than the upside of it.
Well, we shall see, but it certainly means if there's protectionism and tariffs, it certainly means higher wages and more jobs for American workers. This is a very tough issue, because it seems to me that at the end of the day, you know, do we want cheaper prices at Walmart? And certainly we've had them for many years now. Or do we want to have more jobs at home? And, you know, it's kind of like you can't have both ways. It's a trade.
Yeah, but, you know, it gets complicated again. If you raise prices because of restriction of, say, imports, you're not raising wages, you're decreasing the wages overall of the American worker, and that's
because you're saying they're going to have to spend more to buy things, right?
And that will...
Okay, so let me give you my theory about that. That's interesting you say that, and I see what you're saying. You know, hopefully, Americans don't spend all of their money, right? So the delta between what they don't spend and what they make is what they keep, and that actually creates capital formation, right? Which you need to grow an economy.
You know, Jason, that delta is almost zero in the American economy.
Well,
and it's been
yeah, but
that
that's
way.
A problem. And maybe it'll be fixed. I don't know.
Because they don't have, most people don't have enough to live. So if they have more money, they're going to make sure they have food and their kids go to college. I mean, they're not going to save it, and they haven't for the last 50 years. So I would not put a lot of hope in that situation.
Yeah, well, the idea is that increase their wages and they'll have more money. We shall see. We shall see, my friend. I don't know. No, none of us know what's going to happen. But you know,
let's do this again in 6 months.
Yeah. Or maybe a year. Actually, things are such a.
I think it's going to be 6 months before we have some tragedy.
We got to see a reality show out of the Trump presidency. It's like a reality show. Really, it's crazy.
He may resign. He may resign to do that. He'd make more money.
He would make more money. That's for sure. All right. Hey, give out your website or tell people where they can get the book.
Well, as most things are, you can get the book on Amazon. And you can reach me at REP, like Paul, REF, like Frank, 51. @gmail.com.
Bob Filner, thank you so much for joining us. The book again is Trumping Trump, Making Democrats Progressive Again. And folks, I don't want to hear any more about how I'm some big Trump supporter, okay? See, we had Bob Filner on, and he's not a Trump fan, so he wants to Trump. So there you go. Hey, Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jason. It's been great fun.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, HartmanMedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.